Welcome to Beyond the Chutes, is presented by Parasite System. I'm your host, Doug Simcox, and we are sitting in the recording studio in Saint-Tite, Quebec, up here at the Western Festival de Saint-Tite, celebrating 56 years this year. And this is an IPRA-sanctioned rodeo, and the president of the IPRA is sitting here with us today. And what a perfect time to catch up and see what's going on in the world of professional rodeo. Mr. Dale Yerrigan, welcome to Beyond the Chutes.
Thanks, Doug. Good to be back with you.
So we got to see a performance today, and electric as always. The afternoon performance, we are recording on Saturday, September 7th. We're going to come back at 8 o'clock tonight for the second performance. Tonight we'll see the pyro. Tonight we'll see the lasers. Tonight the music gets cranked up. They've got a brand new video they're telling us that they're going to project onto the arena floor. Josie, I was sitting with her. She runs the production itself and says when to turn on lights, when to turn on music, when to get everything organized. And there's a big crew up there that does it. So, as I said, this is an IPRA rodeo. You guys stepped in. Do you remember the year you guys stepped in and began to sanction this rodeo, Dale?
Don't hold me to it. It's not going to be an exact year, but I think somewhere around in the mid-90s, 96 or so, I think it started, maybe 94 or 5 even on a co-sanction basis. And then I think in about 96, 7, 8, somewhere in there, it became an IPRA first sanction rodeo and has been just straight IPRA rodeo for a number of years now. So yeah, so it's been quite a while now that we've been involved. I mean, we're getting close to the 30-year mark.
Do you remember? You came up here as a competitor.
Yeah, many times. And I'd heard about it. People that I knew in the northeast part of the United States that had come up here and came to the rodeo, even back late 60s, early 70s stuff, would talk about what it was and what a sort of crazy, wild place, the amount of people that come here and stuff. But then when I started coming in, Sylvain Bourgeois, who you've met and talked to, he was a former competitor. And when they hired him as the rodeo manager to take over the production of the rodeo, it just really started to go to the next level. People, they hear about this rodeo, but really till you experience it. And you can find clips on YouTube and different things of the Gymkhana and some of the unique things they do here. But really, you can't even imagine what it's like until you come here. The amount of people that are in this small town for 10 days, off and on throughout the 10 days, it's just incredible. And not a hotel in town.
Nope.
I mean,
nope.
They're all in tents and RVs, and if somebody's got a spare room, they rent it out. It's unbelievable.
If you're going to live, we had Christian LaFrance on here, right? And he grew up in Saint-Tite. And has always been around. If you're in Saint-Tite, you're part of the rodeo. You're part of the Western Festival, I should say. Last year, Dale, 721,000 people came through this town.
Yeah, and you would think when they have, you know, I don't know how many people go to the Olympics. I'm sure it's more than that and all that. But they have them in big cities and places that have all that infrastructure and hotels and things. This is... Literally, there is not a hotel in this town, and people stay in other towns and surrounding areas at hotels, but most of them come and stay in RVs. If you see some drone footage from here, the fields around the town, they're full of RVs, and it's just incredible. And the amount of street vendors and stuff, I've just never seen anything like it. And the production of the rodeo itself, the rodeo performance, is second to none.
Second to none, absolutely. These guys, they've honed it down. It is spectacular. It's spectacular, right? And you talk about the town, not a lot of infrastructure, very, very true. 3,800 people live in this town. And again, if you're in Saint-Tite and you're in the community, you're part of the rodeo. You're part of the Western Festival and celebrating 56 years this year. A few years ago, the IPRA said we need to have a bigger representation in Canada. And so now it was IPRA Canada.
Yeah, so not too long after got started up here and involved with sanctioning the rodeo, and this is sort of the crown jewel, if you will. I mean, it's above the others, both in prize money and days of the rodeo and the festival and stuff, but there are other very good rodeos up here and festivals and things that there's a lot of interest in rodeo up here. I first met with Sylvan Bourgeois, with Wild Time. Besides being the manager of the rodeo here at St. Tit, he's also, his company, Wild Time Rodeo Productions, puts on other rodeos. And then BJ Prince, who is a Sam Swearingen Rawhide Rodeo protege and has Rawhide Rodeo in Canada from Ontario, they had a big piece of the rodeos in Eastern Canada. And they were IPRA members. BJ, a former IFR saddle bronc rider before he really just started focusing on production of rodeos and producing rodeos. And so I had a meeting with them to see if we could figure out a way to build these rodeos and work together to build the IPRA brand, but also give them the support that they needed and an opportunity for the contestants up here to qualify for whatever benefits there are on the IPRA with the IFR and so on and so forth. And so as we moved along, we also came to the agreement to create sort of IPRA Canada and have a Canadian finals, which is almost like its own region. And then, so there's a Canadian membership that they can buy if they're just going to stay in Canada and rodeo. And then the Canadian finals is also here at St. Tit, usually first weekend in June. Sometimes it's been the last weekend in May, but, and they use that. The festival committee uses that as kind of a kickoff for the advertising and campaign to kick off ticket sales and all those things for the festival in September. And so all that has worked well. And then started building the membership base up here to support the rodeos. Then Joey Tardif with ERQ also was interested in producing IPRA rodeos. He was a stock contractor that had been in the rodeo business of their family for many years. And so after we got enough members built up to support more rodeos, then Joey joined the group as well. And then just this last year in 2023, Black Creek Rodeo Company, Matt and Sean Fisher also came on board. So now there's four producers in Eastern Canada that are part of the IPRA and IPRA Canada. So it's been a gradual process, but it's worked well.
And back to the origins of the name, International Professional Rodeo Association.
Sure. Good fit that way. And over the years, way back, there were a few rodeos in Canada and here and there. I can remember there being one in Toronto. Thunder Bay used to have an IPRA rodeo for many years and stuff, but we'd kind of gotten away from that at some point. Just things changed. And so it's good to have that back in the fold. And you really feel it when you come to Quebec because of the French culture and the French language and all of that. I've said it 100 times. I don't know what this announcer's saying here, but he gets them really excited.
He does.
Because it's all in French.
He does.
And when I first came here as a competitor, they didn't say anything in English. Yeah. And there wasn't the video boards and clocks and stuff that there is now. So you get down to the short round on Sunday and you'd run your steer or whatever event you were in. And I didn't even know what my time was. I mean, I knew if I made a good run or not, but I didn't know who was winning anything. There wasn't a leaderboard like there is now digitally and stuff. And so I can remember as I got to know Sylvan and them, I said, do you think you could at least call out the time and score in English so that, because the announcer that did it back then was bilingual and the both announcers here now are bilingual, so they can speak English. And so they started calling out the time and score in English. So at least we knew how fast we were.
Yeah.
And now, of course, there's the digital boards and stuff that do replays and all of that.
So did you win this rodeo?
I never won it. I won second a couple of times, and so I got close, but I don't have a buckle from St. Tit. I have a golf buckle from St. Tit.
Do.
From last year. They started a golf tournament for the Cowboys and some of the personnel and stuff on the Monday, but in between weekends, and
yeah.
So that's my only claim to fame in St. Tit. My horse won it. They won it on my horse a lot of times, so had a lot of success here, both myself and my horses, but I was never the champion. I never got the buckle and the jacket.
So let's talk a little bit about the state of the IPRA right now. Let's talk membership, let's talk sanctions, all the things that maybe are some of the major metrics of rodeo. How are things?
It's good, and this year it looks like it'll be another record-setting year as far as number of rodeos and members and things like that. So last year, with co-sanction everything all in, we sanctioned about 615 rodeos.
Okay.
And so this year, when I was at the office last week, Victoria that processes those sanctions and results in the office, she told me that currently she had 655 in for 2024. And so that'll go till the end of November. But so that's an all-time high. Memberships, I think we're going to get pretty close to 3,000 this year. And okay. So that, again, will be an all-time high. And you need those two to go along together. And some will say, well, you have too many rodeos and not enough members. But it's a bit of a catch-22. You need more members to get more. I mean, you need more rodeos to get more members, because you get into new areas and have more activity in an area. That's another incentive for people to buy the membership, along with the increase in prize money at the IFR that we saw last year and those things. That's also an incentive for them to buy an IPRA membership and go and support the rodeos.
You bet. And speaking of the IFR, big money last year. It doubled from the prior year. Same kind of money we're going to see this year?
Yeah, the payoff and all of that should be the same as last year, and hopefully you were in Guthrie last January, and we had some unfortunate weather. It was record cold for a few days, and had a little snow, and you've been all over the country, and I grew up in Minnesota. Like, snow and cold doesn't bother anybody.
Yeah.
Oklahoma, it does. And so anyway,
yeah.
not crying over spilled milk, but it kept some of the people away as far as attendance. And so, but we're able to maintain what we did last year.
Good.
And then hope to, with increase in sponsorships and things like that, we don't want to sit on our laurels and just be stagnant there. Hopefully in the near future, we'll be able to have even greater increases there and stuff, because it is it's not the only thing that drives membership, but it's a big incentive, and it's your showcase event, and you want it to continue to grow and get bigger and better.
And last year, big numbers, a lot of event records were blown away. Hudson Bolton, I mean, wins the bull riding year-end championship, has a great season, and comes in a little over 50,000. I think he wins at the finals. Takes him, 80,000 overall for the year? Pretty incredible.
Yeah, he had a great season and had a little bit of a lead coming into the IFR, and then he just dominated there and placed in every round and won the average or aggregate, and with the increase in prize money, it really shot his year-end total up there, and he just a phenomenal young bull rider.
What, 18, 19 years old?
Yeah. I don't think he turned 18 until either right before, I think about a week after the IFR, turned 18. So he's still 17, I think, when he won all that money. And
that's got to be a record, right? I mean, number one, a world champion at 17?
Well, and we've had, because the IPRA does allow minors to buy memberships and compete, but usually it's in the barrel racing. We've had some really young champions in the barrel racing and things like that. And not to take away from them, I mean, it certainly still takes skill and everything to win in the barrel racing. But in a rough stock event like it's pretty amazing to ride that well at that young of an age. And there's no telling where his career will end up.
Oh,
he's really a phenomenal talent.
Absolutely. And you talk about a legendary, historic rodeo arena, the Lazy E in Guthrie, Oklahoma. I don't know that there's a better place to watch rodeo, Dale.
It really is. The Gaylord family built it back in the old mid-80s, I think, and it was built for rodeo and Western sporting events, and so it's a little ways off the beaten path. It's not right in a big city or anything, and it's not too far north of Oklahoma City, so it's easy to fly into Oklahoma City and get there and all of that. But it is, I laugh when the first time I ever went there, when it was fairly new to an event, it was gravel roads to get out there to it when you left Interstate 35 and stuff. Now all the roads are paved, and they continue to build houses and develop that area and stuff, so it looks a lot different. But it really is a beautiful facility. They're adding an event center. It won't be done. I mean, realistically, it won't be done for the IFR this January, But on the east side of, for people that have been there, on the east side of the building, they've leveled that parking lot and they're building an event center there. So we'll be able to expand our trade show and things like that in the future.
Okay.
New stall barns, new restroom shower facilities and things like that. Eventually there's some more covered area to house livestock coming and lots of things. And for all the events that they have, there's certainly the IFR. I think it's the best one they have, but I'm biased.
Yeah,
but it really, it's one of the showcase events they have and a big spectator event. They have a lot of team roping and barrel racing competitions and other things as well that aren't as much a spectator sport. But then the National Junior High Finals will be moving there in the summer of 26.
Oh,
so they're getting ready for that as well.
You bet.
And they, I think it's under like a 10-year contract, so it'll be there for a long time when it moves there.
And those are big numbers, right? I mean, number of contestants.
Yeah, big numbers. And I'm not sure the exact number at the junior high finals, but I'm sure it's over 1,000 kids. It may be more like 1,200, 1,500 kids that come there. And because of the age, junior high age, they're going to bring family and siblings and parents and grandparents and all of that. So they continue to also expand with stalling and then camping and RV hookups and stuff as well, because a lot of people want to stay on grounds.
You bet. So going to build the infrastructure and to be able to go into a world-class type of facility, get your cards bought. Let's get to the International Finals Rodeo. Now's the time. Let's get this kicked off. And you can't talk about finals without talking about the International Finals Youth Rodeo. And that took place in July. You were out there.
Yeah, we had a really good event. It's 14 to 19 year olds. So similar to high school rodeo as far as the age group. It used to be the exact same requirements as high school rodeo, freshmen through seniors and stuff. And in 2023, we changed it to strictly an age requirement thing. I'm 100% for high school rodeo and all of those things. It's become a little more challenging to go by those high school ages because of homeschooling and people taking some of the ground rules and wording. You say you can't be enrolled in college and stuff. Well, now there's people taking college classes when they're certainly a junior in high school. A lot of seniors and even some sophomores, I think, now are taking college classes. So anyway, we changed to an age requirement, and it's easy to verify by birth certificate and so on. So we had a little over 800 kids entered there this year. I say kids, some of them are young adults now, and they're on that upper end. But a great event, really high level of competition. It always has been, and it just, it amazes me the talent level at a young age and really compete at a high level. About $250,000 paid out plus prizes to those young people, and the IPRA has been involved there. This was the 33rd year maybe. And so the IPRA has been involved from the beginning as far as sanctioning and rules and personnel and approved personnel and all those things. The last few years we've gotten even a more active role. We manage the whole rodeo and as well as the volunteers. There's hundreds of volunteers that it takes to put it on, to get people where they need to be and do stalling and camping and all those things. And it really is a great, great event. And if you think the future of rodeo or the future of the country for that matter is in jeopardy, come and hang out for a week in Shawnee. It'll really restore your faith and things. We had entries as far away as Australia and New Zealand this year.
Yep.
It really was an international event. Yep. Canadians as well, but I think we had people from Australia and that part of the world before. During COVID and all that, that kind of went away, so it was good to see some of them back, and I think they really enjoyed themselves, and we enjoyed having them.
Yeah, and we got to talk with them during that. They were having fun. It was a big, grand adventure for them. And what's so cool about the International Finals Youth Rodeo is no qualifiers. Pay your entry fees. Come on.
It is. And as I mentioned, high school rodeo, that I started rodeoing and stuff, I have great respect for their place in rodeo, and it's a great organization. But depending on what state you're in, It's a year-long commitment almost. You've got to go to the what they call the region rodeos and stuff and qualify. We get a lot of entries from Texas at the IFYR. And Texas, huge state and big rodeo state, but they have 10 regions in Texas. So you have to go compete at your region rodeos to get to go to state. Then you got to be in the top four when you get to state to go to nationals and so on and so forth. And so the IFYR, if you think you're good enough to compete, and I always call it a showcase event. And what I mean is you don't have to do any of those other things. You can be, I'll use the team roping, for example. There's so many opportunities to win money in team roping now at the USTRC events and World Series. And there's just all-star ropings, and there's just tons of them that those people at an early age can go compete for money and win a lot. And they don't want to go to the high school rodeos that pay some, but yeah, they can go to those other things. And then as long as they're in that age group, if they think they can, and it gives them a chance to come and compete against the best in the world and see where they measure up and really see where they're at to either get that pat on the back and win something and I'm ready for whatever is next, or I need to step up and I need to work a little harder because I saw people in my age group that were a little better than me. It motivates them that way. But I think it really is a true showcase event that anybody in that age group, you can come and put up your money and show your wares and what you can do.
You bet. So to our listeners, get your kids registered. It's a perfect opportunity. We can't talk about the IPRA these days without adding in the WCRA. And youth rodeo, WCRA's got youth rodeo. But, man, the partnership you guys have built has been pretty incredible to watch now.
Yeah, they have a what they call DY, Division Youth, but on the next level for anybody to go after is they have about three or four big events a year. They're not a sanctioning body, they're not a membership organization. They put on and produce in partnership with some committees or depending on where the location is. They've got one coming the first week in October in Tryon, North Carolina at a beautiful equestrian center there. It's another really cool rodeo. Last year was the first year to go there, but they're going back again this year. And it is, I mean, there's I don't know how many arenas are on that place, but you know, there's hunter jumpers doing their thing over the next stadium over, and here we are having a rodeo in front of this huge grandstand. It's just a phenomenal place to have it. And so with that relationship with them, sister company of ours, the points, you can nominate IPRA rodeos to qualify to go there. They have a virtual rodeo qualifier that you just, again, download the WCRA app and you can nominate wherever you're going. IPRA rodeos, other rodeos, St. Tit this week, or this will air after that, I'm sure, but yeah. But the second rodeo here at St. Tit, because it's divided up between the Canada Cup and the regular rodeo, if you nominate this rodeo, then you'll get to go to Tryon to the next WCRA event, major event. And I think last year they paid out, gosh, $300,000 or
something
there. Every
bit of it, I believe.
And it's a great event. And then in turn, 10,000 of those points that you win at the WCRA rodeos, you can count in the IPRA. If you're a member, and then you have to go to 10 IPRA first approved rodeos to keep those points. That's part of the trade-off there and requirements, but it's been a great relationship, and it works both ways. It gives some people an opportunity to learn about the IPRA that maybe not as familiar with it, and our current existing members, it gives them a great opportunity to go to a huge event, big money, again, kind of a showcase deal, compete against the best that are out there, or some of the best that are out there in any association, and then get some extra points in the IPRA.
And they're stepping up. We're seeing them step up. I mean, Blaine Houston had a heck of a Carolinas last year. What was he, 17 years old, I believe, at the time.
Yeah.
And you can't talk about the IPRA, these days without talking about their performance, the team that rolls into the Kid Rock Rockin' Rodeo Teams event down in Texas. You can't talk about them, about that event, without talking about, basically, let's call it what it is, IPRA rodeo team.
Well, and so the most of the teams at the inaugural Kid Rock Rock and Rodeo last spring in Arlington, Texas, were sponsorship teams. There was a sponsor tied to them, but the WCRA had a team, and so they made the decision. The rodeo they had in Corpus Christi last spring, just prior to the Kid Rock Rock and Rodeo, they said the winners there are, that's going to be our team. The top two in each event, that's going to be our team. And they stuck with that, and there were several IPRA members that made that team that were successful in Corpus Christi. They had a draft and stuff for those other teams, and obviously I was biased in it and hoped that the WCRA team would do because of the connection with the WCRA, but because there were many IPRA members on that team. And they won the whole thing. The team won $1 million. And then that was divided up between the coaches and the athletes that were on that team. But it was phenomenal. I went and watched, and Kathy, my wife, and I went. And as an added bonus, our son, Garrett, was one of the in-house announcers there and stuff. And it was a great experience. There's some things that they're going to refine and work on, the production and the timeline of it and stuff. But there was a huge crowd there and it was just a great, great event. And now coming up with Rodeo Carolina, that's the qualifier for the next one. So
it is.
The champions at Rodeo Carolina will be on the next team, WCRA team, at the next Kid Rock Rock and Rodeo. So another, again, great opportunity to not only go win a lot of money at Tryon, North Carolina, but then have an opportunity to go compete for $1 million at the next Kid Rock Rodeo.
That's excellent. And congratulations to the WCRA/IPRA rodeo team. Man, they came and they showed it. And that's neat. Put that kind of a statement out there in the world.
It really was. And it's just, I think they had to be the underdog because they weren't handpicked. But they showed their mettle when they had gone through that qualifying process and kind of, Maybe it gave them a little confidence that they just won a big event that got them that opportunity. And, you know, I think I'm sure everybody was excited about being there. But I think they had maybe a little extra motivation because they weren't drafted. Maybe that gave them a little extra incentive to really bear down and do well.
You bet. And kind of coming full circle, you mentioned Garrett, your son, 2 times PRCA Rodeo Announcer of the Year. He announced Kid Rock Rockin' Rodeo. But tell us about the first time he worked slack at the Lazy Arena, I believe it was, with the legendary Clem McSpadden.
Well, and it wasn't at the Lazy E. We live in Pryor, Oklahoma. There's a rodeo at Vanita, Oklahoma, that's just 20-some miles from our home, and so we had seen Clem. Clem was a great guy and a great statesman of Oklahoma, but you know, his history, I mean, he was the production manager of the NFR when it was in Oklahoma City, and just long ties. He's related to Will Rogers, I think a nephew of Will Rogers, and just all of the history and stuff with him. And so had announced the National Finals Rodeo and stuff, so I was going to some rodeos still competing, and Garrett would tag along, and he was, I think, in about third grade at this time, and he already was aspiring to be a rodeo announcer then, and he'd like to hang out with the announcer and stuff, and most of them were very nice and gracious to him, and Clem was one of those. So when we saw Clem at a rodeo, he asked Garrett if he was coming to Vanita, it was a week or two away. And Garrett looked at me and I said, yeah, we're going to be there. And so he said, I might need you to help me with the slack. Cause back then they had a lot of slack at Vanita on a Tuesday night. And it lasted pretty late into the evening or into the night. And so we go up there and Kathy and I were having a discussion about it's a school night and stuff. And I was like, he doesn't really know who Clem is right now. It's just a rodeo announcer that's nice to him, but he doesn't realize what a figure and what a legend Clem is. And so even if he has to miss a day of third grade, education's important, don't get me wrong, but he doesn't have perfect attendance anyway.
Yeah.
And so we went to Vanita and we have a picture at home and where he was up there in this little metal announcer stand with Clem McSpadden, and here he is, he can barely see over the little counter. and they're co-announcing the Slack, and they get a pretty good crowd for it. And all of a sudden, I look up there once, and I was entered, I was competing, but I look up there once, and Clem's just kind of rocked back in his chair with his arm on the ledge resting and just letting Garrett have at it and stuff. And so, he, like I said, he was another one of those rodeo announcers that were very nice and gracious to Garrett and helped him get started and get some experience. And a lot of those announcers, they don't really want to do the Slack anyway. They're kind of just forced to. And so them letting him do things like that. But it's a cherished photo at our house. And now that Garrett has gotten older and has kind of realized who Clem McSpadden was and what an icon he was, it means even more to him now.
Oh, but I bet.
It's pretty cool.
And sitting here in St. Tite, he did a lot of rodeo up through Canada, Garrett did, for BJ and Ontario and that sort of thing. He spent a couple summers up here, didn't he?
Yeah, when he was old enough to drive, but not really, I didn't think old enough to go somewhere by himself. So BJ wanted him to come up. He and I came up a couple times, and he just did like one rodeo, and then we went back home. I would travel with him for BJ, and then with Rawhide, and then as he got old enough to drive, BJ said, why don't you bring him up and he can stay the summer and do a run of rodeos for me and stuff. So I helped him drive up. He had a truck and trailer and helped him drive up and go to the first rodeo with him, and then I left him with BJ and Michelle, and they're good people, and took good care of him and looked after him, and he spent most of the summer up here in Ontario and did a bunch of rodeos for them, and then I'd maybe fly up to the last one and help him drive back home or something. And again, great experience for him at a very early age. BJ and I joke about a couple of them when I just came to him and we were just going back home. I ran the music for him and stuff, so there I am. I'm the music director, and Garrett's announcing, and it was pretty funny. But again, great experience for him, and all those things really helped him hone his skills. And he started, I think he did his first IPRA rodeo when he was 12 years old,
and
Butler, Missouri, and he had done junior rodeos and barrel racings and lots of other things even before that, but it was what helped him get going.
You bet. And we had an opportunity to see him live, hear him live a couple of years ago in Cheyenne. What a great voice, and just what a great personality really comes through, and just the genuine interest and love of rodeo comes through as he talks.
Well, and I'm sure that when people's parents do something, they kind of get drug along.
Yeah,
some of them probably get sick of it, and it doesn't matter what the hobby or the how they make a living. I mean, some people that are grow on a farm, they don't want to be farmers. They see the hours and the sleepless nights that their parents put in. They're like, I want to do something else. But when he was 2 weeks old, I mean, Kathy and I were, she wasn't back riding yet when he was 2 weeks old. But I mean, we both rodeoed, and so. We loaded him up and away we went.
That's what he's doing.
And so, thankfully, he enjoyed it more than shied away from it. But he was always interested in the production side of things. I mean, he liked the competition. He would watch it. But he was more interested in what went on behind the scenes, what the stock contractor was doing. He wanted to know what the secretary did and the timers did. And he studied all of that. And then Bruce Lurkey, who, for instance, that we've had conversation about with Longhorn World Championship Rodeo.
Yeah.
Bruce, he would kind of intimidate a lot of people but I think he took a liking to Garrett because of his interest in the production side and stuff.
Okay.
And so he never announced a rodeo for Bruce, but Bruce would let him hang out with him and stuff. Because he did the whole thing. He produced, he wasn't just a rodeo producer. He did the advertising, everything. He'd go rent these big coliseums and put on the whole thing. Sell the merchandise, you name it.
You bet.
Sponsorships, advertising, the whole thing. And he would, we have photos of Garrett when he is little with a walkie-talkie clipped to his belt and a microphone on his collar. And he would... Bruce, I almost let him be part of his little production team and stuff. And at that age, he couldn't have a lot of responsibility, but he would keep an eye on things and stuff. And and another one of those deals where somebody was nice to him and showed interest in him, and he in turn showed interest. He wasn't just a kid playing with it or playing a role. He really truly was interested. And I think all of those things have helped him as an announcer, because he knows what everybody does at the rodeo. He may not have done that job. He hasn't secretaried a rodeo or picked up at a rodeo. He used to take a horse. If we had room in the trailer, he'd take a horse. He wouldn't be out there during, say, the bareback riding or saddle bronc riding, but he would hang out with the pickup man and help them drive out calves and steers and stuff.
Okay.
And he studied what they did. Okay. I mean, he kind of knows all of those pieces, and I think it's helped him. One, the love of the sport and all of that, but also knowing what all those people do, he can see some things coming before it happens, and whether it needs to be brought to somebody's attention, or you're going to have a little delay because this happened or that happened. You go to the clown or you do whatever, or you do your sponsor reads or whatever so it all flows and you fill those gaps.
And speaking of clowns, Brinson James, Brinson the entertainer, who's up here tonight, who a few weeks ago was in Calgary, right? Who's probably the entertainer now of the PBR. He also came up through kind of similar ranks. He came up to Canada and worked with BJ for a couple of years too.
Yeah, and him and Garrett are very close in age, and they work together on those events. Go back even further than that. His dad, Cliff Hollywood Harris, is still clown and rodeos, but was very active back then when those boys were growing up. And so they'd see each other from time to time at rodeos. And then circle back to the Longhorn rodeos. Garrett, while he never announced a Longhorn rodeo, he did the sound and music at some of them.
Really?
And so Cliff was clowning them. Yeah. I can remember it being at Huntsville, Alabama, and Cliff was clowning, Garrett was doing the music, and of course Jerry Bellis was announcing, and all of them were there that had been involved with Longhorn for a long time. And so Brinson was out there doing some acts with his dad, and Garrett's doing the music and stuff. We have some pictures of Garrett and Brinson and Taylor Bellis, who now has a new last name, Mary, but she's in the sound production business and stuff, and her husband do PBR productions, do bullfight, those ultimate bullfights and those things. And so those three kids are all, again, pretty close in age. Taylor's a little younger than Brinson and Garrett, but they kind of grew up together around the rodeos and stuff, and they got involved in rodeo at a very early age. And so pretty cool traditions to keep going, and they've all found their niche. And Brinson has, I think between him and Matt Merritt, they do most of the big PBR events. There are some others that do some stuff from time to time, but they've, after Flint retired, they kind of carried on the torch there with the bigger PBR events.
Yeah. So that's exciting. This part of the world, this part of Canada, Ontario and so forth, upstate New York, all of that part of putting these youngsters out into the world, part of it.
Sure. And BJ Prince will jokingly say, those, I should be getting a cut of Garrett and Brinson's paychecks because I helped him get started and stuff. And he did, he literally did, and gave him a chance again at a very early age when, regardless of their ability, a lot of people would have said, they're a little young, check with me in a few years. But he gave him opportunity, and I think it worked well for him, and it certainly worked well for them.
You bet. So the IPRA changed hands a couple of years ago. I know I'm switching gears here pretty quickly. And part of the new ownership group, you got a lot of new computer systems. You've got next gen, the central entry system, that's up and running. You've got the rodeo logistics side. Talk a little bit about the status of those programs and how that's helped the Cowboys, Cowgirls.
Well, the entry process, and whenever you introduce something new, there's going to be a learning curve for both sides, for next gen to get familiar with our organization, all that. They'd been taking entries for some other things for a little while before they started taking IPRA entries, and then to train all the people that are using it on the contestant side, it's an app that you download. There is still a phone number that you can call if you're having problems, or you have a flip phone and can't download the app. But for the most part, and the overwhelming majority of people are just using the app to enter. And so the entries are open for multiple days, 24 hours a day through the app. So if you're at a rodeo on a Friday or Saturday night and you're looking at what rodeos are going on the next week, and you may or may not have somebody to travel with, but you get to talking to your buddies at the rodeo, or you win something on Saturday night, so you got money to go the next week, you can say, hey, let's go to wherever next week, and the entries are still open. Doesn't matter if it's midnight after they get their check at the rodeo, they can get on there right then and enter. So it's made that easier and more accessible. And the old days of the books opening at, say, 8 o'clock on Monday morning, and some people had school or work or other things that it was hard for them to be there and dial for hours sometimes to try to get entered at a rodeo. So it makes that a lot easier. And this year things really went a lot smoother there, as we, again, our members became more familiar with the system, and the system next gen learned more about our needs. You tweak things as you go along, but it's really moving along. Some of the other things that there's some things coming sooner with being able to buy memberships and things completely online. You can go on there and fill out a membership application now, but you still got to send it to the office in Oklahoma City, be it by email, mail, or fax, or whatever, and process it that way. But we're soon to have that up where you can do it completely online. And then working on the admin side of it, where the secretaries can work the rodeo electronically on their computer and then upload the results. One of the biggest hurdles there is, we think we're in 2024 and technology is awesome, and it is, and there continues to be improvements, but believe it or not, there's little pockets in the world that don't even have cell service, let alone good internet service. So we're making sure Rodeo Logistics and NextGen are making sure that it will work offline, so that the secretary can do all that at the rodeo with the draw and all of that, and put the time scores in and audit that. And then, I mean, if they have internet available on site, great. They can do it live.
Yeah.
And then if you have a subscription to NextGen, you can see the live results and all of that. But if you don't have internet available or enough internet available to really make it work at the event to do it live, then as soon as you get back to where you have access to internet, upload it. It can go all those places. The results are posted where the contestants can see them. It's unofficial until our office audits them. We'll still audit the results and make sure there wasn't an error in the payoff or all of that, because we want to make sure everybody gets what's coming to them.
Yeah.
But then it'll also flow to our office. And we have most of the secretaries now, they'll send that payoff sheet to the office, again, by fax or email, or mostly email now, and get that to our office. But we still need all those judges sheets and secretary recording sheets to the office for our archives. If there is a question that comes up, somebody questions whether they broke the barrier or whatever happened at a rodeo, we have those judges sheets where they keep those records and stuff in house. And the more we can make all that flow digitally and get it there in a faster, more efficient manner, and then work toward even the payoff being distributed electronically. And it's just a much more efficient way to do that. That's a little further down the road, because when you get into handling money, there's more issues there.
Yeah.
But I think in a much shorter order, they'll be able to pay their entry fees online, or unfortunately, sometimes you have to turn out somewhere. You break down, something comes up, and you can't go somewhere. But if you can just get on the app and not only turn out at the rodeo and do a notified turnout, but pay your fees, and then all that's taken care of, and you're not having to worry about it the following week, or sending a check to the office, or calling and giving them a credit card, you can just pay online and be done with that. And then it makes sure that the money, the portion of your entry fee that goes in the pot, gets to the winners and the rightful winners there, and that's a good thing as well.
Well, the secretaries need a hand. They have so much they are responsible for. Man, we've interviewed a couple secretaries on the show, and it's incredible the amount of work they have to do and how far ahead they have to go. Better than what it was back when they were manning the phone all night to take the entries. And let me pose a question. Go back 30 years in your career. If you'd have had NextGen, if you'd have had Rodeo Logistics, if you'd have had the WCRA, if you'd have had the IFR paying off this way and all the connections to all the things that are out here right now. And again, Rodeo Logistics, I believe it's through that program, or is it NextGen, where I can go rent a stall, I can reserve a stall, and I can reserve a place for my RV, for my truck and trailer.
Yeah, so Rodeo Logistics has open stalls, which can take stalling and RV reservations. Now, depending on, it's not at every IPRA rodeo, because not every IPRA rodeo sure. has stalling and camping and things on site. But for the ones that do, if they sign up for that service, the IFYR, great example, they took all of the stalling and camping reservations for the IFYR. So that's several hundred. And then at some of these facilities that have a turnover, like say they're having a big team roping event. So though a lot of those, not part of the IPRA, but just those, they have those numbered ropings, right? So they'll have an open roping one day, and then the 15 one day, and the 11, and all these different numbers. So some of those people are rotating in and out. The event might last for a week, but they're only eligible to rope for a day or two. Yeah. So then those people come and go, but a little like hotels.com or something for horses, you can go on there and rent a stall, and then the facility or the producer that's putting it on gets a report each day. These stalls are checking out,
yeah.
and so they need to be cleaned because yeah. at 3 o'clock today, these are checking in, and it makes all that flow. And the technology is pretty awesome that they can do those things. There's facilities on there. If you're traveling around the country, you might be able to get on there and find a stall for rent in the area that you're going, and different things like that. So
not just at the rodeos, right. I'm traveling across the country.
Right.
Okay. So back to my question. I took us off there a little bit, but all the technology 30 years ago in your career, all the technology, the money, the WCRA structure, the ability to compete, qualify and compete through the WCRA to go represent the International Professional Rodeo Association at the Kid Rock Rockin' Rodeo. What's it look like for you?
Well, I feel very fortunate to. There were some really great things in my rodeo career, and the camaraderie of the people that I traveled with and I've met and all the stuff and some of the crazy things that happened.
Leaving your horses behind.
Yeah, a lot of people are probably glad that we didn't have cameras in our pocket all the time, because there's not all the photos and video proof of the knucklehead things that people did.
Yeah.
So that's maybe a good thing. But really, the way it streamlined that process and the hours that we spent entering rodeos and doing things like that we could have been doing something else productive. It doesn't matter whether it's making sure the truck and trailer is ready to go, or working on your horses, or practicing, or whatever. I mean, we literally spent hours every week entering rodeos, and so to be able to now get on an app and just, here's my preference, and then I enter the group of rodeos that week, and then I find out when I'm up, and you might have to adjust your schedule a little bit, and I was going to go to rodeos A, I might have to go to B first, and then C, and then back to A, because they're a draw as opposed to the first come first serve that we used to deal with. But it's just made that so much easier and convenient that as we improve the admin side of it, and then be able to pay and receive our money and stuff. I was laughing the other day. We were talking about something. Somebody was trying to run down prize money they'd won somewhere at a rodeo and stuff, or wondering where it was at in the process. And my wife, Kathy, was primarily responsible for it, because she would help take care of that stuff. But we'd carry around a bunch of self-addressed stamped envelopes in the truck, because when you won something or thought you might win something and you weren't going to be there the last day, those secretaries, because of all the work they had, if you would give them a self-addressed stamped envelope where all they had to do was write the check and put it in the envelope. They didn't have to look for the address. They didn't have to pay for a stamp and an envelope and all those things. It was already the postage and everything was on there. Then they were thrilled with that. It made their life easier. So, and especially back then, I don't know if stamps were 20 cents. I don't know if they were a nickel. I mean, I can't even remember. It's been so long ago. But, you know, we would carry those around, and she'd go up there and say, hey, if we win something, if I win something, Dale wins something, somebody in our truck, whatever, would you please mail it? And they were happy to do that. And we would not only get our money faster, but it, so those are the kinds of things we dealt with. Now, people are, they say, you did what?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Of course, now to carry a box of those around would be a lot more investment now because I don't know what.
I don't know what a stamp
50
is.
Cents or 60 cents or
I don't
even
remember
know.
The last time I mailed a letter. I just have to be honest. Yeah. So how many hours you reckon you stood at a truck stop trying to get entered up? And it isn't as simple as that. You got to stop. You got to pull over. You can't be driving down the road. You got to get to places. And it's times five or six people that are dialing on your phone bank, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, whoever was in the truck, I mean, nobody got to sleep. I mean, everybody got up and got on. Yeah. If there was enough phones where we were at a truck stop or whatever, because, again, our generation knows that. I mean, the younger ones that are starting rodeo now, they maybe have not seen a real payphone. Yeah. I mean, because they're pretty much a thing of the past.
Yeah.
But, you know, we would find a place with a whole big bank of them, hopefully, and go in there, and we'd all get on our dial. Plus, we had people at home or other places helping us dial. We'd trade lists with other traveling groups and stuff. Hey, you help us get entered over there, and we'll help you get entered.
Okay.
And so...
the original rodeo logistics.
Oh, yeah. And then... But it clogged up the system because you had 15 people entering the same group of people. And then how do you tell that person, hey, I got in and I got us entered? Because we didn't have cell phones.
Right.
And so those of us standing there in, at the bank of payphones, we could say, hey, I got them.
Yeah.
But the ones calling from home and the other group that we were helping and trading lists with, we had no way to let them know. So they're still calling the secretary, jamming up the system. And you get a hold of them, they go,
You already
entered. Well, let me go through my list because you want to make sure and double check because if somebody's left out. And just it seems like a comedy show now because some kind of Abbott and Costello who's on first kind of a skit. But it that's the way it was. And we some in the busy time of the year, we literally spent hours on a Monday mainly. But sometimes they were open the day before or the day after. But usually Mondays were the big entry day, and we dedicated pretty much the whole day to making sure. And if the entries were staggered, we would jump back in the truck and drive as far and as fast as we could, and then find another bank of payphones and enter again.
Right.
So we at least were making some progress traveling.
So I'm imagining you had this atlas. Everybody had an atlas, right?
Sure.
And on there, did you have little stars? How many phone, where the phone banks were? Did you have preferred phone banks?
Well, I don't think we ever marked them on the map, but we kind of knew where they were. We traveled a lot of the same areas and kind of knew where. And then, of course, you see billboards. There's 76 truck stops used to be big then. I don't know if there are any anymore, but there used to be a lot of them before all of the other Loves and Petros and Flying J's and all those. 76 truck stops were there. and there'd be signs that it was might be 50 miles to the next one or whatever, and we'd try to time it where, well, I think we can get to Effingham, Illinois. There's a bunch of truck stops there and before the entries open at the next one.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'd get there and 30 minutes early, we just have to sit and wait because we didn't have time to get to the next big stop.
Yeah. And the trade-off would be you're not spending all the time standing in line. You've got cameras now, and it feels like extra time for extra knucklehead moves.
Yeah, there's some of that, I'm sure.
So some trade-off here.
Yeah. And some of it, most of it, harmless fun, but I mean, just the things that happen. So while it'd be good to have a video and photos of some of that stuff, probably good that we don't have all of it. And I'm sure it saves some people some embarrassment that all that footage doesn't exist. But
Well, I've got to say, Dale, number one, great to have you on the show. And number two, no one has, and we've had a lot of visitors, a lot of interviews on this show. No one has topped the day we left the horses behind travel story. No one has topped that, Dale. Do you have one that's maybe a close second that you could share with our listeners?
Oh, gosh.
No?
I
that's hard to top.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what measures up to that one, but as we've talked about before, the camaraderie of those people that come together in traveling groups and stuff, it's just like family, and you spend at times every waking hour with them, either traveling to or competing at rodeos and stuff. And what a great way. And I look at young people coming up and the discipline that they have to be successful in rodeo and the commitment that they make. Those are good life skills. It doesn't matter if you rodeo for a few years or a few months or whatever. If you learn that and caring for livestock and all those things that come along, it's great. We were talking about Garrett earlier, Sylvan here. He was talking about, I don't know, Garrett was 3 or 4 years old. He's just little. And when the festival ended on a Sunday, we spent the night and left early Monday morning to go wherever we were headed next. And we had a trailer with a bumper pull trailer and camper, but we had a hay rack on top of the trailer. And Sylvan came down by the campground in the barns that Monday morning before we left. And he walked up there, pulled up by us or something, and we're getting our stuff loaded up and we're visiting with him, saying our goodbyes, and there's Garrett up on the hay rack, imaginary, announcing a rodeo, and he's just going on, and Sylvan's worried about him even being up there on the hay rack. He had crawled up the ladder and got up there, and he's using it like it's an announcer stand. He's just going to town up there. And Sylvan still remembers that. When somebody's talking about Garrett, he'd say, I remember the first time I saw him, he was up on the hay rack. And so he left his impression here on Sylvan at an early age too.
You bet. You bet. Well, Dale, this has been a great visit. Anything you can think of? Oh, I did want to ask one question. Last year at the IFR, this January at the IFR, you guys introduced for the first time the instant replay. Feedback?
Well, and so, fortunately, we didn't have a lot of challenges, because whatever people might say or think, most of these judges that are making those calls are highly trained, and they do a great job. But they can't be everywhere, see everything, and so we wanted to put those in place. So if there was a mistake made, or even if it's not a mistake, but just some things are so bang bang with a call on the barrier or a mark out or things like that. And so I think it was a great addition and asset. It didn't hold up the production of the rodeo very little. I mean, and it's worth it.
Yeah.
It's worth it if you can get the call right.
Yeah.
Because even those judges, they want the call to be right. I mean, they don't want to make a call that costs somebody that should have won something or any of those things. I think as we move forward, we learn some things as well, be it we had the right camera angles for those calls and stuff, but you got to make sure. I remember one, there was a mark out rule challenge, and when you went to look at it, for whatever happened within the system, the monitor that the judge was watching it on, right when you slowed it down to super slow-mo frame by frame, it got distorted right there.
Oh, wow.
Right there where his foot is and where the mark out call is made. And so it was inconclusive because you have to go by. And so we want to make sure that if there's a way, whether it's higher resolution monitor, whatever it takes to make sure that works. So unfortunately, the call couldn't be really made by the replay, but that's not a reason to, what's the old saying, throw out the baby with the bathwater. That doesn't mean that it didn't work or that it's not worth pursuing and improving and continue to work on. And so it just shows, again, nothing's perfect and things can still happen that are beyond any of our control. But prior to that, there wouldn't even been the opportunity for that athlete to challenge that.
You bet.
And so I still think it's a good thing, and we'll continue to work on it and improve it. And there were some things that it proved the judge made the right call. And I'm trying to think if there might have been one call that got overturned in the athlete's favor.
So.
And so that's a good thing.
You bet. You bet. Wow, this has been great. Good to sit down with you in person. We've done a lot of stuff on the phone together. Good to sit down with you in person and catch up. And thanks for all the updates on the IPRA.
Absolutely. And for anybody that has an opportunity to come, since we're here at St. Tit, come and experience this. But contestants and that side of it, the Canada Cup, that's this first weekend, you have to, there's requirements to qualify for it. You have to go to some of the qualifying rodeos up here. The reigning IPRA world champion and average winner at the IFR get invited as well. And there's some ways to qualify like that. But, you know, they're adding 15,000 per event this first weekend, 18,000 per event next weekend. I hope the contestants will keep that in mind.
You bet.
I want them to go to all the IPRA rodeos, but this one is one of those really premier events that steps it up, puts up a lot of money for the athletes.
You bet.
And prior to COVID, there was a lot
more
people from the U.S. that came up here. And then it obviously changed for a number of reasons. They weren't even able to have the rodeo in 2020. But then as it came back out of COVID, there were still some restrictions. Now all of that's gone away. You don't have to have any of those requirements to come up here. But hopefully people consider working on making sure they get qualified to come to the Canada Cup, as well as get in the top, depending on the event. They posted it might be in the top 30 or 35 in some events. Barrel racing, they take 80, and there's a lot of opportunities to come, but there's a lot of money here to win, and it is a great event, and we want to make sure that the IPRA can continue to support it and supply the athletes to put on truly one of the greatest shows there is in the world of Western sports, or really sports anywhere.
You bet. And to get up across the border, not that hard. Got to have your papers for your horses. I mean, right?
Yep.
And your dogs, if you're bringing dogs up through. And you got to have a passport.
Yeah, and that's something that changed a long time ago. We think about COVID and the restrictions that came along then, but really after 9/11, before that, you could just with a valid driver's license cross the border. And then they started to enforce it on flying, that you had to have a passport where you could still drive across with a driver's license or some kind of federal ID. But now you need to get a passport, so plan ahead. That's not something you get in a week's time. And so make sure you get all that in order. And again, just a phenomenal event. And I have never talked to somebody, the ones that win like it better, of course. But I have never talked to anybody that came up here for the first time and wasn't impressed with what goes on and enjoyed the experience of the Festival Western de St. Tit.
You bet. You bet. Excellent event. And come on, cowboys and cowgirls, get up across the border. Let's do this. Dale, been a real pleasure to sit down with you again, as I said, and thank you for the update and this great recording studio. We're sitting here in St. Tite. We want to thank them, the Western Festival, celebrating 56 years this year. And to our listeners, remember to check out our Facebook page. We've got a whole bunch of reels that we've been putting up, and you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. We are out there, all the major streaming platforms. We are up on there, and we've got a website. It is beyondtheshoots.show, brand new website we put up. And we want to thank our sponsors, Parasite Systems, for all they do to support us as Beyond the Chutes goes on the road. And the Parasite System is a push-button parasitic diagnostic system for your pasture animals, your horses, your cattle, your goat, your sheep, your chickens, and now for your companion animals, your dogs and your cats. And they offer a mail-in testing, if you will, for your dogs and your cats. You can go online and request their mail-in system at parasitesystems.com. And they remind us to test
before we treat, so we know exactly what it is we're looking at. And remember, for all the miles that you guys go up and down the road, you, those of you that are hauling dog and horses, team roping horses, barrel horses, calf roping horses, you name it, we want to keep our horses in good condition and nothing better than controlling the parasites that they are exposed to. And we've got a coupon, BTC023, for 50% off your test kits. Just go to Parasite Systems and get that ordered up. And I want to say thank you again to our guest here. This is Beyond the Chutes with
Dale Yer.
My name is Doug Simcox. Thank you for listening.